Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's a Friday morning. Sunshine, a little chilly out there, but not too bad. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff here, and the panel is now in session. We have with us today investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, just strolling in.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
I raced it. It's 12 degrees out there.
It is. And you had to warm up the vehicle for an extra minute
or
two,
one
right?
Does not stroll in that weather.
Okay, fair enough. Also here today is the father of hotnomics, Siena College professor of economics, Aaron Pasini. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also, Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. Hello.
I'm still feeling the magic from Magic Mike on the Wheels of Steel over here with that introduction, that song.
By the way, thank you for mentioning that. That's Junior Watson, who'll be at the Linda tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Good blues. So we'll have good blues on the bumper music. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Yo, sir. Yo.
How are you?
Just dandy.
Oh, good. We welcome a newcomer today, President and CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Brichetti is here. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Have you ever heard the show before?
I have, and I saw how nice you all treat Rich, so I thought I'd come and get some for myself.
Ah, well, very nice to have you here, and you know,
she wants a taste.
I think you'll probably get one.
I'm guessing so.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, if you want to send us a quick note with your thoughts. No links, no attachments. You know the rules by now. It's been a long week. No abbreviations. Proofread if you could. panel@wamc.org. Well, the impeachment trial of President Trump has opened in the Senate. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says new evidence reinforces the need for senators to call additional witnesses. Pelosi warned senators not to become all the president's henchmen. Trump derided the proceedings anew as a hoax. All the senators stood on Thursday, swore an oath of impartial justice as jurors for the proceedings. Chief Justice John Roberts presided in his black Supreme Court robe. The full trial begins next week. David Soares.
We are living in a Lifetime Channel drama series full of terrible, terrible acting, bad plot lines. I mean, first of all, every person in law enforcement could only wish that every criminal that we had out in the world was as intelligent as the President of the United States. And that's saying a lot, okay? People that are indicted right now, under indictment in the Southern District, that had personal conversations, personal attachments to this president on the eve of his impeachment, his trials set to begin, the formal proceedings in the Senate, we have one of his co-conspirators on national television talking about evidence that's relevant to the case.
Talking about Lev Parnas?
I'm talking about Lev Parnas, right? So here, I think the show and the direction specifically with this topic is we can't avoid getting into the genius of Nancy Pelosi delaying the submission of that impeachment and creating an environment for other things that are so predictable, but other things to surface, putting extreme pressure on the Senate to have to willfully, blindly look away from a marching herd of elephants that are going through, you know, the Senate. That's going to be the entertainment for me.
Alan Chartok.
Well, you know, David, I have a question for you, if I may, and sure. That is, Lev Parnas said something that really put me back on my heels. He said, and I don't know whether to believe it or not, one of the reasons that the Republicans will not deviate is that they are afraid that Mr. Barr, the Attorney General, will investigate them and find something. And I wonder whether you heard that and whether you make anything of it.
I did hear that. And you know, when you have a person who's constantly making, you know, perfect phone calls, you don't think that person who's making perfect phone calls is not reminding people of the fact that he's got, the most powerful weapon at his arsenal in the form of William Barr? I was just reading the other day that they're launching an investigation into James Comey, you know, because we don't have any corruption in D.C. We don't have any corruption, you know, on the part of a number of members of the House. We don't have enough of that. We've got to go back and deal with Comey and make headlines there.
Heather Bruschetti, you are clearly champing at the bit.
I don't know about champing at the bit, but I want to go back to the genius of holding back on the articles, because I actually have a little bit of a different view on that. I think that by holding it back and now having this new witness appear who is under indictment, questionable. I mean, I watched the interview. He's really, his integrity is really questionable. He's clearly kind of over a barrel. He was arrested trying to leave the country. But waiting until now for this witness to appear, it looks so choreographed. It looks contrived. And I think that undermines the credibility of the process for people who are doubters, who think this is all about politics. That just reinforces the view that this is some big elaborate play.
Well, first of all, an impeachment, let's understand that when you're talking about impeachment, you are talking about a strictly political process, right? You're not talking about a legal process. Because a legal process would never allow for the target of an investigation to implement privileges prior to the investigation being fully investigated, and then allowing for that target who is being
investigated. What privileges are we speaking of here?
Executive privilege.
Okay.
So,
which in the Constitution,
In a target, we would. There's no process that a people have rights, but there's no process in the criminal justice world where, you know, targets, right? Even before you can begin investigating them, exercise certain privileges, denying you access to people with information, denying you access to records that pertain and are relevant to the case. Now, having said that, the interesting play here, the people who defend the president, certainly the people who defend the Republican Party, seem to forget when they talk about hearsay evidence, because when we were having this conversation several months ago, we were talking about, well, it's all hearsay. They have no witnesses. Well, the witnesses are being blocked. So then their go-to line, the pivot is, well, they should have gone to court and litigated the issue. So we could be here a year from now, be here another 2 years from now. So the problem that I have with that entire philosophy, right, is we know the target of this investigation has continued to strong arm, delay, obstruct, because that's actually the legal word, obstruct. So Nancy Pelosi, right, taking the time to suggest that Nancy Pelosi taking the time and allowing for the American public to digest the facts here and understand what's going on. And also, again, in that space of time, we've had explosive additional material, one in the form of Mr. Bolton expressing a desire to
we don't know what material he's going to say.
Well,
you could if you were a Democrat on the prosecution.
It's all immaterial. The case is definitely proven, and Pelosi's genius was to bring that out. And it isn't just Bolton and Parnas. It's the GAO saying the budget office acting on Trump's instructions broke the law. And what the Republicans are doing and will continue to do is say it doesn't matter. Yeah, he did it, so what? It's not impeachable. Who's the OMB? Who's the GAO to be saying he broke the law or not? It's up to us, and we like him. Yeah. And McCartney said it yesterday.
The GAO could have said that a month ago.
They were not asked. They act on a request from a representative that happened from the representative from Maryland the day after impeachment. So they could not have done it.
So no one requested until after the articles of impeachment were
dropped.
Correct,
and that's some lousy investigation.
While it's in this sort of limbo or it's about to begin, we have this new, it's illegal. And by the way, it's illegal. I mean, to say that he broke the law, to me, that I don't think it adds any additional weight to anything.
Yeah. See, there you go.
I just don't.
But see, here's the thing. The great Republican talking point, right, has been up until the goalpost moves every time there's a new bombshell. Because up until now, the talking point for the Republicans, well, he didn't break any laws.
I'll be clear. I mean, I believe that laws were broken. I'm not suggesting that laws weren't broken. But, I mean, I may or may not, and I'm it's not a confession. I may or may not have broken the law on my way here because I was late. I
mean,
I don't say
that.
I know.
You have a right to
take care
silent.
Of that.
Thank you. No, I guess my point is I don't find that earth shattering. I find it fascinating.
But it should be earth shattering.
So I
agree. Oh my God, Pasiti's here too. I didn't realize.
Well, I got these two right. people on opposite ends of
you got a jobs report
here.
You want to
Listen,
talk
I've
about, Aaron?
I've got the high chair.
That's
okay?
coming, lady.
So it's clear that he broke a law, that he violated the Impound Control Act. I think the more important question that any self-respecting senator should ask is, well, why did that happen? Who was involved? What were the motives? Mm-hmm. And that is the basis of why there needs to be witnesses in a trial in the Senate. It's not, well, he broke a law. It doesn't rise to the level of being impeachable by fiat. They just can't say that without evidence and supporting testimony from White House administration officials who have been subpoenaed and refused to appear before the House. And you would think that in a Senate trial that might be relevant information. And I'm not a lawyer, but am I right, David?
So you're absolutely right. Because what we're talking about here is not a criminal justice process where, you know, your case, basically, when your case is being tried, that's it. You're really confined to the strict, you know, law of that particular case. In this instance, it's the Senate that's going to determine what the parameters are and what the rules for the entire proceeding. And so they'll be having those debates, which will be interesting to see. I mean,
we won't be seeing them because the rules are that the press will not be able to see most of it.
I think that wherever you stand on the issue, this is, I mean, to me, I felt like history was being made watching those articles being delivered to the Senate yesterday, and I think we're all going to get a civics lesson over the course of the next couple of weeks. But I do want to go back to one issue that was addressed that was pointed out earlier, and that is Parnas having no credibility.
Which is what one of the Ukrainian leaders said yesterday.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But here is the interesting thing, right? In a trial, right, prosecutors don't go out and select the witnesses. We never do. The witnesses are people who the defendant decide to, you know, associate with. So that's what we're getting. And then when we talk about credibility of people with questionable credibility, it's not what they're saying that we pin all our hopes to. It's what we can corroborate from what they're saying. And so just the fact that he's out there saying the things that he's saying and providing a roadmap, so to speak, for an independent investigator to go out there and corroborate, that's relevant.
Mm-hmm. Alan.
This is so scary. I mean, I'm sure that everybody who's listening knows that we're at a juncture now where this government is either going to end up as a democracy or a relative democracy, Republican democracy, which we have now, or whether one person is going to have such preeminence that we are doomed as a governmental institution to see a strong man emerging. Everything David has said today, I subscribe to. I really do. I think it's just nonsense to think that this guy is doing prudent. He is. He's a real threat, and every bone in my body knows it.
I think it's more than just Trump being a threat. I think it's a lot of Republicans who are just blindly adhering to what he has to say without any investigation, interrogation of people who were in the room who heard the call, like Bolton. That's the issue. I mean, so I think it goes. I mean, I agree with what Alan said, but I think it goes well beyond that. And then that this, you know, involves
how can it go beyond that?
Well, it involves
the
legislative.
How can it go beyond the fact?
It's the executive branch and it's the legislative branch at this point.
I think what Parnas said yesterday that was the last couple of days that was interesting to me. Because it's very familiar to me, is the minute he was indicted, arrested, the minute he was arrested, and the right to counsel attaches, right, there was this mad scramble. And the mad scramble was to get the attorney, right, of the head of the crime organization, to get that attorney to represent. I mean, it sounded just like what the mob does. It sounded like just like what any organized, you know, criminal organization would do. Hey, We'll represent you. We'll take care of you. Just don't cooperate.
And Rosemary's point about excluding the press, making sure there's only one microphone that is on, as opposed to one camera that is on. It's extraordinary that this is happening in this country now. Rosemary, as a student of the press, could you talk a little about that?
Yeah, I mean, David mentioned a civics lesson. It should be a civics lesson, and it's not one that we've had. We've had very precious little experience with impeachment. So we talked yesterday about how the role of the Supreme Court justice, we don't really know it. It's never really been tested. That will evolve. And the same with what people are seeing in this trial, how it's conducted, how evidence is weighed, should be something that we're looking at, but we won't. Continue to get what we have now and what this discussion reflects, partisan views of what's there and what's not, what's important and what's not. I have pretty strong feelings about that he's wrong and then this is impeachable. And yet I listen to other people who I respect who would say things like you just did, that
it doesn't matter to Heather, the GAO
report doesn't matter. It sure as hell matters
to me.
I just want to be clear, though.
Didn't say that none of the acts were not impeachable. I didn't.
But you said specifically the GAO, which was
I said
a
the
laws
GAO
here,
report to me,
and it was broken.
Added on to everything else doesn't change the fact pattern significantly the way it's being reacted to. And I think that gets to the underlying issue here, for me anyways, is that the theater around all of this undermines the credibility of the whole process, and you end up with people not feeling better informed because they don't trust the information that they're receiving. I mean, when you have things like handing out souvenir pens at the signing of the articles of impeachment, that's silly.
That's a Republican talking point. It was a historic event. It should have been handed out. It was reported,
and people read it in the news, as I did. Do I know that it's true for a fact or not? No. But anyone who's tilting one way or the other is going to look at that and say, really? I mean, is this really just all about political theater? I think if you look at the underlying allegations, they are scary. I think if you look at the history of impeachments in the United States, this is by far, to me, the most serious set of allegations that led to the impeachment. But all of that is getting muddled by all the politics of this. And people are so extreme to one side or the other that no one believes what they're hearing from the other side.
I'm 1,000% in agreement with you there. Here, my experience with politicians that are under investigation, okay, their only instinct is to always defer to the politics. It's getting on camera. It's having talking points. I've prosecuted elected officials that fed me information and evidence because they were, whatever they were saying, they believed that they were defending their position, right? They were, in essence, engaging in politics. This community in Washington, D.C., this bubble that they're living in, it has been the poorest display, right, of statesmanship that I've ever witnessed.
It's
infuriating. It's infuriating to watch a hearing where you're trying to get at the truth, and instead of asking questions that's designed to educate and flesh out the truth, it's my time to talk. I'm going to have my talking points. I'm going to articulate them all under the guise of a hearing.
Let's take a quick break here. This is the Roundtable Panel. We are joined today by Albany DA David Soares, Siena College Professor Aaron Pasitti, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, President of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Brachetti, and WAMC's Alan Shartok. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's a Friday morning panel. We're listening to the music of Junior Watson in our bumper music today. Junior will be at the Linda tomorrow night at 8 p.m., thelinda.org, if you want to find out more. This is the Roundtable panel, and today we welcome Siena College Professor Aaron Pasitti, Albany County DA David Soares, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, WAMC's Alan Shartok, and President and CEO of the Business Council of New York State. First time on the program, Heather Brachetti. Are you having fun so far?
Yeah, absolutely. This is great.
Which of the panelists would you like to throttle the most right now?
Well, obviously the DA.
All right. Well, let's hold that till the second part of the program. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. And a few letters here to read before we move on. This one is from Barbara. What would happen if John Bolton went on PBS, CNN, or any of the other news outlets with a judge and had himself publicly sworn in, then gave his testimony from microphones for all to see? Would the Senate be required to use that information? That's a weird one. Go ahead, David.
Well, since the Senate determines the rules of evidence, if they had a 51-person vote suggesting that they should accept it, I guess they would.
I mean, you have to believe, and again, you make the point that this is a political thing and not a strict court of law.
Yeah.
However, you have to believe there will be witnesses after the opening, not statements, but the opening cases have been presented.
It's hard to say. And here's part of the problem, right? I mean, and if you're, I mean, we're here now, but if you were part of a defense team working on strategy, right? The first thing that you would do is say, okay, let's say all of this takes us right to the point of trial. What's the position that I want to be in? What's the best position that I can be in order to either have an acquittal or to have or have them not convict me on the top count? The best position that this president was in, it may not have been a perfect call, but it's not an impeachable offense. That's the most perfect position that he could have been in, because everything else that trickles out, it would sort of reinforce the notion that, well, it may not have been perfect. He's not really the best communicator, but it's not impeachable. Instead, nope, the ego couldn't take that. So it had to be a perfect call. And so what's trickled out is evidence that furthers, you know, the fact that it's just not and it's putting his defense in a terrible position. So what can you do in a situation like that? Well, hope to have a Mitch McConnell, that's the foreman of the juror, right? And make sure that he crafts, you know, an environment that, you know, least exposes, you know, the evidence that's going to trickle in. Are they going to have witnesses? I doubt they have witnesses.
It only takes 51.
I doubt that it takes that they have witnesses.
I think they should, though. I think for political reasons and recognizing that this is a political process, I think for the good of the American public, I think it would be a good idea to have witnesses, because the debate will then become, well, they didn't have witnesses. It was a foregone conclusion, which I think we all know it's a foregone conclusion. But I think by having witnesses and at least having an airing of some of this, there would be some more credibility to the process, because I don't believe that they're going to remove him. You know, no president has ever been removed. But I think that if you want to have some credibility at the end of the day, the senators actually ought to call the witnesses.
I just want to point out that Nixon would have been removed. Right? I mean,
oh,
you know,
I think so. Yeah. Yes.
Nixon would have been removed. I think that's important. I also agree with David Soares. This is as to why you might not see witnesses. At least I think I agree with him, if my premise is correctly. They are scared to death of this guy, of Trump. When Parnas said what we talked about earlier, that they're afraid that they're going to get investigated and indicted by his hand-picked attorney general, I, despite your reticence on this, I believe that. I think these people are really quite worried about how mean this president can be. It's very reminiscent of all the other dictators around the world who have done similar things.
Rosemary.
Speaking of which, a new book is out, A Stable Genius, Very Stable Genius, by two reporters from the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And it gets exactly what Alan was talking about, how mean he is. And in it, I was just reading this morning an excerpt about the whole backstory on Rex Tillerson calling him an effing moron. It was after a meeting with his top military people, and they were trying to explain to him the value of things like NATO, value of things like alliances, and why, no, you don't really want to send your army out only to places that will pay for it. That's called mercenary. They were doing a simple tutorial, and he began raging at them now about how they were all a bunch of babies and dummies, and he wasn't listening to them anymore, and he stormed out. And all the generals just sitting there watching him, stunned and also obedient, because you don't ever talk back to a commander-in-chief. Obviously, we don't have those same rules here at the panel, Alan. But they all, as they're all walking out and they look stunned, that is when Tillerson said, he's an effing moron. And of course, he had all the support of the military people. Now they're all gone, and including Tillerson. He never came back into his grace. That is the man we're dealing with. So if there is reason, I've asked this question before a lot. Why are they so afraid of him? It's more than just losing an office. Isn't losing an office better than being subjected to that kind of treatment? But he is genuinely a bad person to deal with.
Aren't grown adults, especially ones in positions of power, sort of able to stand up to mean people?
Well, it depends.
We elect mean people all the time. I mean, we elected a governor who resigned, who was notoriously mean.
The steamroller?
To his staff, to other leaders. I think being mean is not doesn't preclude electability. Does it make you a good leader? Probably not. But I think those are just kind of side issues to all of it. I mean, there's plenty of presidents in our history who had temperaments that were questionable. It's just we're getting a lot more information about it now. Well, I'm not suggesting that there was anyone exactly like him.
I think temperament is definitely discussion we could have. But what I'm talking about is, where does his power derive from? How can he have such control over McCartney and McConnell? Where does that come from? And part of it is, yes, he is mean and is a bully, but there is more to it.
Well, there's more to it because, I think we know it. We know it because, you know, and look, I have tremendous respect for people on the other side of the aisle and people who have different opinions than me. That's what we're supposed to do, is talk to each other and learn from one another, right? But this man injected a virulent venom in the bloodstream of this country and our political discourse. So we're not even talking to one another anymore. It's tribal, and we're shouting past one another. And the base of his party, which all of these senators rely on, and all of these other electeds rely on, okay? He's managed to hijack this entire party. Not only the actual physical party, he's managed to hijack the culture of the party as well.
I just want to say, though, I think that the division well predates his presidency.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in three-quarters of our states, both houses of the legislature and the governor are all the same party, which means people of the other party in each of those states feel powerless in their own state government. That's scary.
I think the fundamental difference here, and I'll say this, I'll say it, I've never, ever, ever heard a person who's running for office, first words out of their mouth, got to get the Mexicans out of here, yo.
Yeah.
That's some bad hombres, yo.
And he is
that without someone being run off.
And he is such a liar. I mean, yesterday he's saying he didn't know Parnas. And of course, all the media people, the television and radios and everybody else, have absolute proof. See him hobnobbing there, socializing with him. I mean,
dinner at the White House.
Yes.
So if Trump had a clean record up until this point, in terms of honesty and integrity, I think we'd have a much different impeachment hearing structure. But going back to Inauguration Day, he started lying. Biggest crowd ever. Then it was the hurricanes going to hit Alabama. That was sharpied in at the last minute. There's the USMCA is the biggest trade deal the country's ever signed.
All right, hold on. We're getting to that in a little bit.
No, I'm not going to talk about it.
I'm
saying
is now.
There is a – I mean, it's a pattern of behavior. It's in his DNA that – he's a narcissist, and he lies about everything to serve his purpose. Now, that's different than George W. Bush, who stretched the truth, and you could say lied, to achieve some of his policy objectives. But
Democrats don't lie. Democratic presidents don't lie.
I'm starting with Bush, and I'm working my way up to Obama.
Oh, come on.
We respect you, Ray, and you've told us many times you don't participate in the substance of these discussions.
He was speaking, Alan. Let Aaron finish, please. Go ahead.
Of course, yes.
There's a difference between being disingenuous and saying Iraq has weapons of mass destruction when you have evidence to the contrary. I'd like to hear one substantial, large-scale piece of evidence that happened under Clinton or Obama that rises to the level of that, or to the level of Trump withholding aid from Ukraine. I don't think the positions on the shape of the earth differ in this respect.
This one's from Frank in Middletown. Before Roberts swore in the senators, I think he should have called McConnell, Graham, and any other senator who said publicly that they will find Trump not guilty even before the trial started and dismissed them for not being an impartial juror.
So he's already violated the oath.
Well, come on now. The Constitution of the United States says that they're all going to be sitting there. So it's a nice letter to the editor, but we know that this isn't going to happen.
And I read somewhere that someone was, which publication said, well, you know, the Democrats who are running, who are senators, should recuse themselves because they have a stake in Trump not being president.
Yeah, I think the idea of impartiality is something different than what's being suggested. I mean, I think it's that they have to sit and listen to all of it, but I don't think that in the ordinary sense anyone can claim to be impartial in the House. I mean, I don't think that the first stage of the process was impartial either, but that's not, it's as David pointed out, this is a political process.
Didn't this president get on the phone and basically, yes or no, I mean, we're not talking about politics here, and basically threaten another leader unless they came up with something about Joe Biden?
All right, let's take a quick break here. David Soares is here, Aaron Pasitti, Heather Brachetti, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We will be right back. Yeah, you got to love the blues. It's a nice to have some blues on the program here. Junior Watson playing at the Linda tomorrow night at 8 p.m., thelinda.org. Roundtable panel is in session here. We have Aaron Pasitti. And don't worry, the USMCA is coming up, sir. You just relax.
No worries here.
Rosemary Armeo is here, David Soares, and Heather Brachetti. And you can join us by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. Before we get back to the letters, Rosemary, the...
Yes.
The news about the reporters and the restrictions. Have you been following this for the impeachment? Tell us about this.
Well, what would you like me to tell you? They basically are very restricted. They're being kept to certain pens, they're called. And I love the way this is all for decorum, supposedly, because inspired by what happened after the last Supreme Court nomination when members of the public accosted Jeff Flake, a senator, they've decided that the public and the reporters must be caged. So they're being kept to certain areas. There are a series of rules, for example, no questions can be asked until a half an hour after the adjournment of any session.
Why would they have that rule?
Because it gives you a time to do two things, either escape or to come up with an approach, because you're going to know what the questions are. There's no way to be accosted and answer off the cuff. There are rules about some sessions will be closed down entirely. Not even staffers can come in. The senators cannot even have their cell phones. So there is no way it will be totally any information that comes out will be what they talked, what they agree to talk to, and it'll be, of course, very partisan. There'll be no eyes on it. What else? It's just incredibly restrictive, so much so that many Republican senators are even complaining about it.
Now, of course, it's a slightly different situation than the usual reporter talking to a lawmaker, right? Now, they are jurors in this case. So, David, there are certain things the jurors must sort of not talk about, right?
Yeah, well, jurors are sequestered in their own space. When they're deliberating, they're free to engage in everything that they've learned from the presentations. They're not permitted to use their cell phones or go on to a computer. In fact, if we have things on a computer that we submit to them for them to review, we have to make sure that that computer has no ability to get onto the internet. So look, the whole process is designed to have people focused on what is in front of them, not what people are saying. It's a process that has worked in this country for hundreds of years. We have a different process here that is not designed to achieve that at all.
I love that we compare impeachment to a trial when it suits them and then says, oh, no, it's not judicial at all. It's political. This is also a very solemn procedure by the most important body of our government. Well, Supreme Court is also important, and we're not allowed to see how they deliberate either. So that's part of the problem, is that we're not seeing what happens. We spoke earlier about the signing ceremony with the pens. You didn't have to believe me or listen to NBC talk about it. You could have seen it.
Right.
It was on C-SPAN. It was on all of it. Fox had it, too.
Yep.
So you can see it and make your own decisions. We're not going to be allowed to do that. The other thing, talking a very seems technical, you can only have one camera. You put one camera on a hearing like this, and it is boring. Just look at C-SPAN. So it's a way to automatically limit who is going to watch the entire
proceedings.
I don't
think it's going to be boring.
Not for Parliament, my dear.
No, it's going to be. Parliament's not one camera.
Love Parliament.
Hey, Alan, I was pretty young when the Nixon impeachment brouhaha went. Well, exactly, and you can remember this. Do you remember restrictions such as this being on reporters back in the early 70s when this was going down?
Well, I do not, but don't forget, we didn't have an impeachment trial. We didn't have a conviction trial. He got out and he left.
Yeah. All right. And what about for Andrew Jackson?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I remember Andy very well.
Yes.
He and I spoke often.
This email came in from Bob in Albany. David's being naive. Prosecutors don't pick their witnesses. Really? Two words. Jailhouse informants.
Yeah, you know what? And those jailhouse informants... Oh, jeez. Do I have to get into this?
Yes.
Yes.
When I say that we don't pick our own witnesses, what I'm saying is that usually the people who have information that are relevant to the defendant in that specific issue are people that are associated with that defendant. And we choose them. Yes, we do choose them. But remember, it's the defendant that chose them first. Now, if you're talking about things that happen in a jailhouse, I wonder why all those people that are in a jailhouse are in a jailhouse.
This one is from Jan in Galway. I heard an interview today on WAMC. I was disturbed by the point made that Trump wouldn't be held accountable for breaking the law because he didn't know it was against the law to hold back Ukraine's military aid. Why are our politicians not held to the same standard of behavior as everyday citizens? Well, I thought ignorance of the law is not an offense.
So my understanding is that the... Government Accountability Office said he violated the Impound Control Act by withholding the aid, but there's no penalty for it.
And actually, the real violation, I mean, it's either by withholding the aid or by not notifying Congress that he was so, you know, to me, again, I don't think that it adds anything to the discussion. I'm not saying that what happened was right or wrong. I'm just saying I don't think it adds anything.
There's one other thing that supports that, which is there's nothing there about Trump violating the law. It's the Office of Budget and Management who did. If he had ordered them to do it and they said, no, we can't, we won't,
that
we wouldn't even be having this decision at all.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing that we're hearing from Parnas, that even if you believe him, even if you find him credible and enough to say we got to take him seriously, he's not saying that Trump told him to do anything. It all goes back only to Giuliani.
Who I think Bolton said was a grenade waiting to go off, or one of those people said
and
that.
And Giuliani said everything I did was with Trump's okay, and Trump continues to support him, so one could make the conclusion, but the Republicans who say there's not a direct line are not lying.
Okay, this one's from Ellen. Subject heading, growth of executive privilege. The intransigent Congress, unable and unwilling to work effectively, has left presidents with little alternative to act by executive order. We reap the results of years of deliberate obstruction. And that's from Ellen.
Yeah, I've said this repeatedly, that we have not resolved, and the Congress, the House Democrats, did us no service in that, in this latest proceedings, to figure out what exactly are the limits of executive privilege. Certainly it should exist. No one says not, but not the way this president has used it.
But,
and there's nothing to stop him so far.
But they are.
Who is they? The McGain case might do it.
Exactly. It's being litigated, and here's the process. Here's part of the process. Part of the problem is that it's going through its traditional traditional
winding
process,
through.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's winding through, and it does so at a slow pace. I think what's going to happen is if you see a change in the Senate and a change certainly in the executive office, I think you're going to see laws being drafted to make emergency
Can I ask about that?
Proceedings.
Why can't the Supreme Court say, okay, we're going to clear everything and do this now. There's nothing more important.
Well,
and didn't that happen in Nixon?
People think that judges can do whatever judges want. That's not true. Their roles are defined by the Constitution. It's defined by by the rules and the laws. They can't just unilaterally decide, hey, I think I want to hear this, and boom, you know, have it come up.
So you are saying they cannot do this and they are prescribed by law from doing it?
Yes. It has to wind its way through the appellate process. We certainly had a circuit court judge that declared that McGann can, in fact, testify. That's going to, of course, be appealed. They're going to give time to perfect the appeal. That's going to be a long time. And then, you know, the Supreme Court will come back into session in the wonderful month of October, and it'll decide what cases it wants to take up. And, you know, then and only then will it do so. But I'm not saying it's this October, because the appellate process hasn't wound its way through yet.
But, David, we know that sooner or later it's going to get to the Supreme Court as slowly as possible for these appellants. And when it does, that Supreme Court is going to split 5-4, and we know exactly why, and we know exactly who appointed them, and they know it, and they know it too.
I would agree with you, but the only thing that I would just caution everybody here on is the fact that this president doesn't really care about executive privilege, because he's not running for office because he really wants to win another term. He's actually running against the statute of limitations. If he wins another 4 years, all the crimes that he committed at the very beginning of his first year, you know, things he won't be able to be touched for. So that's the issue. He's running against his liberty.
I agree.
I was just going to say that I don't think the outcome in the Supreme Court, you know, predictability. I think Supreme Court justices surprise us frequently by not taking the position or holding the views that we expected when they were appointed. And that's one of the nice things and one of the beauties of the Supreme Court is that they're appointed for life, and they actually do have freedom to deviate from what I guess they were branded as when they take the position. That's all. Well, that was my.
You know, we're going to need a political scientist who's going to line up all of the recent cases in which it's been absolutely predictable.
Not with the Affordable Care Act.
I'm just hoping Clarence Thomas is listening to the show today.
I don't think that's very likely. This last email for this part of the show, and then we'll break for news. This one's from Russell in Wurtsboro. Nancy Pelosi's genius in holding back articles of impeachment not only allowed new evidence to emerge, putting pressure on the Senate Republicans, but was timed perfectly to pin Warren and Sanders down in the trial, while Uncle Joe gets Iowa and New Hampshire all to himself with a few days to go before the all-important first caucus primary. Anybody?
Wow.
I don't think there's that much of a difference.
Look, Bernie is very important, right? And he's going to be a senator, and people are going to be watching him, and he's important for that reason.
Yeah.
So I don't think the fact that he's standing on the stoop in New Hampshire is going to make that much of a difference.
All right, let's take a break here. It's the roundtable panel. We have Siena College Professor Aaron Pasitti. We have the Business Council's Heather Brichetti. We have Rosemary Armeo. We have David Soares at Alan Shartok. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. They've already broken down into discussion groups, so let's take a break. Love this. Welcome back to the roundtable on WAMC. It is 10:05. It is a Friday. Beautiful bumper music from Junior Watson, who will be at the Linda tomorrow night at 8 p.m. thelinda.org if you want to find out more about that. It's the roundtable panel today. We have, let's see here, WAMC's Alan Shartok. We have investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. We have Albany County DA David Soares. We have Aaron Pasitti and Heather Brichetti, and they rhyme, and that's exciting. Heather is the president and CEO of the Business Council of New York State. First time on the program. Very exciting. Nice to have
first
you.
First time, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if I can come back.
I'm just saying, the way you threw that left at Rosemary and came over with an overhand right to me,
it sounds like
you've had some practice here.
I'm terrible.
It's good to have you here, and thank you very much. This email came in from Paul in Williamstown. Why would the argument to be on the right side of history not work for Republicans? Everybody knows that more and more bad stuff will come out about Trump over the next decade or two, so the moderates can get out in front of it and say they did the right thing by impeaching him.
History these days is a tweet in yesterday's news cycle. That's history.
People are looking at the next election, not history.
All right. This one.
And if I may just say, these Republicans are scared to death of him, and they don't want to lose their offices. It's that simple.
Look at Marsha McSally. And that's Marsha.
Marsha
McSally is like the girl who you thought dated Bobby Brady. So wholesome and everything else. And Marsha McSally literally let the. She was ready to fight yesterday.
She attacked your guy, Alan, the CNN reporter, who asked a very reasonable question, completely expected, and she goes, "You're a liberal, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking to you."
She was tough.
Someone needed a snicker, bud.
Awful.
You're suggesting she was hangry?
She was hangry, I'll tell you that.
This one is from Russ, subject heading, "Chilling Realities." I have to disagree with Heather Bruschetti's concern that politics is interfering with the impeachment process. It is politics. Democrats took the House and are seeking to limit the reach of the president's power. Better to get little done than have the president bring the government down around his head. Knowing the outcome, Pelosi opted for a quick trial to make a point that the House is watching for executive subterfuge. Unfortunately, McConnell has decided to drag this out for a few weeks of pointless dithering, and that is from Russ.
So he left out the part of holding back the articles of impeachment for a long period of time in order to secure a rule change in a House that you don't control. I mean, so it's all perspective, but my point is it's partisan politics. It's the overlay of partisan politics, which makes it undermines the credibility of the process.
In the name of George W. Bush, it was all strategery.
This is from Mary. Good morning, panel. I'm surprised at how accepting I was at first of the news that reporters won't witness the Senate proceedings. As a member of a free society, rather than thinking that must be how these things are done, I should protest. Is calling my representative the only way I can demand that we, the public, be allowed to witness the process?
That's a good way to start, yes.
Well, we will be allowed to witness the process, though, right? There's a camera, there are microphones.
No, there's whole parts of it that are going to be process. Shut down. Right.
I mean, you could call your senator, but you should probably look at your senator's contributors and reach out to one of their lobbyists, and maybe then you'll get some influence.
It's actually
in the
none
Senate.
Of the senators have input. It's only Mitch McConnell who will make this decision.
Moscow.
This one is from Linda. Death of the Republican Party is the subject heading. Even though I am a progressive, I value having at least two parties representing different concepts. We need the fertilizer of debate and compromise, the expansion of pollution that comes from hearing different approaches and priorities. There is now no party representing conservative constituents, and this is a huge loss. Rick Wilson, writer of Running Against the Devil, who is a true Republican, bemoaning the loss of his party, also gives the Democrats instructions on how to win by acting like the Republicans, not Trumpians. One trouble with his instructions, which include adapting your message to appease voters to the locality you are in, is that Democrats by nature put ideology above winning, but there might be room for a little more practicality. And that's from Linda.
Can I see Linda's letter there?
We've redacted her last name in case you want to track her down.
Linda had a lot to say here. This is good, man.
You think so? All right, take that one home
and
put it on the wall.
One home.
Sure, all right. This one's from Joan. Trump, a racist, fascist gangster, was elected as president by racist, fascist Americans with the help of a Russian fascist dictator, Putin. We are now being governed by the rules of a theocratic Christian Dominionist fascist oligarchy. This impeachment is our last chance to hold on to a democracy. It should not be belittled in any way. And that is from Joan in Glenmont.
I want to put something out for a vote. We only include one fascist in a correspondence as a new added WAMC limitation.
And also at the end of the week, please, just two syllable words. I have enough trouble as it is by the end of the week. Now, this one is from Philip. You can talk impeachment all you want. The real crime of 2020 will be voter suppression. Well, that's
true.
I mean, you're predicting the future, and let's not get enraged about it.
It's happening now. It's not the future.
This one is from John. People in prison. To David Soar's comment about his wondering why those people were in prison, because they are poor. Whether or not they are guilty, they are in prison because they are poor. If they were guilty and rich, they likely would not be in prison. And justice for all? And that's from John in Valley Falls.
Hey, John, I don't know about Valley Falls, but over here we actually have people who commit crimes, and so... Maybe I could look to move to Valley Falls, where apparently people who are in jail there are just in jail because they're poor and they're not actually charged with crimes.
I'm going to step out of my place here and just say, I think we do have a system that makes it very difficult for people without means to defend themselves. But to David's point, I think we do have the best justice system that exists. It's not perfect, but certainly some people, as a former defense attorney, I can say some people who are in jail probably should be there. And some shouldn't.
The problem here is that we're having a social justice and an economic inequality in the context of public safety, but it's like public safety but danger-free. You know, it's almost like caffeine-free Coke. Mm. You cannot have a conversation about public safety and not talk about dangerousness. We can talk about economic inequality and try to fix that. We can talk about social justice and fix that, but you can't leave the fact that there are people that are dangerous. You can't leave that out of the conversation. And one last thing.
Yeah.
I just want to say, looking at Linda's
you're
letter
still looking
here,
at
I'm
that
still
letter?
Looking at Linda's letter,
he
man.
Hasn't, he hasn't put it
here's
down.
What I like.
What?
Fertilizer debate.
Yeah, you like that?
I'm thinking we ought to rename the show Fertilizer Debate.
Well, there's a lot
there's
of fertilizer.
Another, there's another word for fertilizer, yeah, isn't there?
You got that right. This one is from Karen. I wouldn't say that Democratic presidents don't lie, but never over 15,000 times. President Clinton was held to account for it when he lied. Also, the Democrats, in addition to considering who can beat Trump, need to consider who can beat Russia. And that is from Karen. And that's all the letters we have right now. It's the roundtable panel. The email address is panel@wamc.org. If you can send a good one, David might keep it and take it home. The panel today is David Soares, Aaron Pacitti, Heather Buschetti, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. The Senate has overwhelmingly approved a new North American trade pact that rewrites the rules of trade with Canada and Mexico.
Aaron gears up.
Oh, Aaron is very excited. Passage of the measure gives President Trump a major victory before senators turn their full attention to impeachment. The It's like NAFTA, only
better.
Slightly better.
More perfect.
It's better.
It's more perfect.
Tell us about
it,
Mr. Economist.
I think what Heather said is right. It is certainly better than NAFTA, but that's a really low bar. I mean, NAFTA was absolutely...
What was wrong with NAFTA?
That, like Ross Perot said, created a giant sucking sound from Mexico, where it made it so easy for U.S. manufacturers to export jobs and production to a lower wage, less regulated in terms of environment and labor protections to Mexico. So it's important to understand that this is not a free trade agreement. There is no trade agreement ever passed in the history of any country in the world that is a free trade agreement. All trade is managed. And it's important to understand how trade is managed and who benefits from that management. So, that being said, the USMCA is better than NAFTA because it does create some protection for workers. It requires that more of a car is made in North America to qualify for zero tariffs. It rolls back the arbitration system for corporations. There's monitoring and attempts to prevent labor violations in Mexico. It increased the number of parts that have to be made by workers earning more than $16 an hour. It opens the U.S. and Canada for more trade in agricultural goods. It's easier for workers to unionize in Mexico. So these are all good things.
Why did Schumer and Gillibrand vote against it?
And Sanders.
I think.
Climate change.
Yeah,
but climate change is not part of the USMCA. I mean, that just, neither is, you
that's
know.
That's why they voted against it.
They voted against it, but they're not going to. They voted against it because they don't want to give the president any kind of victory whatsoever. But USMCA, I mean, for New York State exports over $20 billion a year to Canada and Mexico, 18 of it to Canada. And one really important provision in this relates to agriculture, and it's going to be huge for upstate, particularly dairy industry. And so, I mean, this is tremendously beneficial to New York in particular. So the fact that they voted against it, I think it's
yeah.
Please tell
politics.
Me my Chobani's not going up.
No, but you know what? You might get more flavors because they'll have a bigger market. They'll have a better export market.
Sure. Yeah, I can't figure out why was it 10 in the Senate opposed this? NAFTA wasn't perfect. this isn't perfect, but these are the two options that are in front of us. So you either vote, you know, you if you reject the USMCA and therefore you keep NAFTA in place. For those who voted against it, I would like to see a policy proposal that is different and has enough support to get through.
I mean, it's so important to New York in particular. Close to 700,000 jobs in New York relate in some way to the Canadian or Mexican export markets. That's not a small number of jobs. And the fact that this improves the conditions, particularly for New York exports, it's stunning to me that either of them would have voted against
it. Well, I don't think it's stunning because it is politics.
Right.
Stunning. Well, this passed, and they knew it was going to pass, and their vote, they could use their vote symbolically and not hurt their state.
Yeah, that's true.
Look,
good point.
First of all, I don't like the new name, the USMCA. It makes it difficult to dance to. I like YMCA. It's easy.
Right.
I learn all of that.
Sure.
But I actually lived in the region that was the most devastated by NAFTA. That's New England, right?
Don't forget the Rust Belt.
We immigrated here to this country and worked in the mills in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. And the minute that bill was signed, those companies were gone. And it displaced so many people. And you know, my little city's never recovered from it, right? Places like Worcester, a lot of mill towns along the eastern seaboard. And, you know, you say that there are imperfect trade agreements. I think trade agreements must address the issue of labor and wages, right? And we have to create, you know, a competitive marketplace throughout the globe, because if we continue to engage, whether it's multilateral, you know, trade agreements without addressing the issue of wages so that we're creating more incentives for companies to stay here, you know, I don't see much of a future for people here.
So it's important to note that all of the components of the USMCA, which does not roll off the tongue.
Just dance to it. Can't dance to it? It shouldn't be named that way.
It should just be, NAFTA 2. That all of those provisions, provided that they're followed, means that the flow of goods and services escape tariffs. Now, companies have the option of not following those regulations and just paying the 2.5% World Trade Organization tariff. So this is not set in stone. These are pillars that if you want to ship goods tariff-free, here's the list of things you need to follow, including the wages, including protecting workers' rights to unionize and so on. Companies can just say, you know what, we're not going to do this, and we'll pay the 2.5%.
So like the luxury tax in baseball, if you go over it, you pay the tax.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, the enforcement of this is going to matter. So back to the original question of why did some senators not support it? Maybe that they thought that these should be more binding than it is. But interestingly, so to David's point, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio in the late 90s when NAFTA was passed.
Yeah, and dog pound.
You could just count the steel mills shutting down day by day by day. So it's interesting to see that Sherrod Brown, a very progressive Democrat senator from Ohio, voted in favor of this.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, Heather Bruschetti, Rosemary Armeo, and some breaking news, Alan. On the AP, Trump legal team for impeachment trial will include Alan Dershowitz and Ken Starr.
Experience.
Shocking. Just
really?
Shocking.
Why is everybody laughing?
Oh, my God.
As Louis said at the end of Casablanca, round up the usual suspects.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how this thing works out. I saw a thing in the New York Times about, and I think we alluded to this earlier, Justice Department investigating years-old leaks and appears focused on Comey. Federal prosecutors in Washington are investigating a years-old leak of classified information about a Russian intelligence document. They appear to be focusing on whether the former FBI Director James Comey illegally provided details to reporters, according to people familiar with the inquiry. And again, this is from Adam Goldman's piece in the New York Times today. The case is the second time the Justice Department has investigated leaks potentially involving Comey. Apparently, they are scrutinizing at least two news articles about the FBI and Comey published in the Times and in the Washington Post in 2017 that mentioned the Russian government document, and hackers working for Dutch intelligence officials obtained the document, provided it to the FBI. Both its existence and the collection of it were highly classified secrets. The timing is what is suspect here.
Well, here's a case where there's no one to cheer for in this one. First is vindictiveness on the part of the administration, which typically in America, you'd let your opponents go. You don't deal with them after the fact. That's not my phone.
Huh.
Not me.
Okay. Alan, I think your phone is doing things. All right.
Sorry, it's kind of pull.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's vindictive and the timing is suspect, and that's really weird. But also, Comey has boasted about this. If you remember when he was first testifying before, he said, I told a pal about this. He said, go to the New York Times. So if they want to go after him for it, I'm all for it.
Well, Comey is a very strange,
self-righteous guy.
Comey's a very strange fellow.
Oh, boy, I can't believe that. I can't believe you just said that.
Nope, it's true. I have no love for him.
Yeah, you know something? It is frightening. And I understand why so many of the social justice activists are angry at a process that allows, you know, the entire weight of a government to pursue actions against
enemies, and abuse it, right?
So this is one where, you know, we ask the question, like when Parnas says that he's afraid of the DOJ because of William Barr, this is precisely the reason why.
Yep.
And a guy like Comey can sit back. First of all, if he is super intelligent and he's done his homework, they're not going to find anything here. I'm telling you this now.
Just like the Hillary, when they went back on Hillary.
But the problem is here's a man now that has to hire a lawyer, right? That in the event that, you know, they're disingenuous and they do manage to, you know, charge him with something, he'll have to defend himself. He'll be eventually acquitted. But do you want to know how many millions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of dollars that will have to come from him personally? This is the tax. It's a tax, right? It's the Justice Department taxing the enemies of this president.
I have no opinion on this guy's character, but yeah, there's no way whatever damage is going to be done is already done. He has forever lost his reputation, former FBI director who at one point, you know, was thought highly of, and now everyone hates him. It's really unfortunate. And you're right, the weight of the government coming after him. Who would want to be an FBI director? Who would want to be in any of these positions?
And that right there that's what I find so ironic. But then again, that's the reason why this presidency is so ironic. You know, talking about a deep state. Okay, well, when you hire your guy, you know, whose primary objective is to be loyal to you as opposed to, you know, the faithful execution of the Constitution, you know, you are laying the foundation for a deep state, right? When you can basically pick up the phone, the Office of Budget and Management, and tell them to hold back aid to a country that is literally at war with an enemy of our country, that's deep state. That's a tremendous abuse of power.
Well, when we've forgotten McBride, he's already done this. He's already gone after an FBI director and ruined his career, pulled him out. You remember he was found, he was prosecuted and taken off of his jobs in a way that he had no retirement. So vengeance against
McCabe,
his enemy.
Oh, McCabe, you mean. McCabe.
Sorry, McCabe. Yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. I said the name wrong.
It was a week before he was scheduled to receive his pension.
And so it's meanness and vindictiveness, yeah. So it's not that Comey is, they're just going systematically after everyone. Hillary and Comey, McCabe, it's crazy.
Is someone moving their furniture? And
maybe upstairs. We're having a new couch put in upstairs.
Yeah.
In the studio. Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. Will you stop moving couches, Alan?
I will.
All right.
Do you still hear the couch being moved?
Let's see. Everyone at home, listen for the couch. Let's see.
Okay, I'm going to tell the truth.
What?
I'm in New York for the Great March.
What?
And here I am on the what's called the Comrex. So I've been riding it, turning it up and down based on the cement truck, which inevitably is parked outside the window. And that's the moving of the couch.
You're so here. You're not in the studio? I thought you just didn't have your phone book today to sit on. Yeah,
right.
The interesting thing about this New York Times piece is that this comes back to possibly Russian disinformation. The latest investigation, again, quoting from Adam Goldman's piece, latest investigation involves material that Dutch intelligence operatives siphoned off Russian computers and provided to the U.S. government. Information included a Russian analysis of what appeared to be an email exchange between the 2016 presidential campaign, during the campaign, between Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was at that time chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee, and Leonard Bernardo, who was an official with the Open Society Foundation. Whose founder was George Soros. And it suggested in this exchange that then Attorney General Loretta Lynch, Wasserman suggested that Lynch would make sure that Mrs. Clinton would not be prosecuted in the email case. Both Wasserman Schultz and Bernardo have denied being in contact, which may lead to the suggestion that this was Russian disinformation.
You know, that's intriguing, but going back, David, I think you're right that the real lesson here is don't mess with this administration because we'll come after you. It will cost you money and reputation.
I just think this whole thing is like an episode of The Americans, and I wish someone would make it into a Netflix show. I mean, it's centrifuge and who made up what and what are the implications. And I mean, the whole suggestion that Comey did this so that it wouldn't look like Loretta Lynch was rigging it because of this email, which is like one way of interpreting it, it's just... You know, it is. It's like a plot twist in The Americans to me. And if people don't know the show, they should watch it. It's really good.
I agree with you, comrade.
It's on Netflix, I think, or Amazon, one of them.
I don't know if there's new seasons, though.
Didn't that start on one of the networks, The Americans?
Yeah, USA.
Yes, it did. I believe it is FX.
Yeah.
It might be FX.
Now, I've never seen the show. I don't see shows that have been made post-1974. But is there anything in that show that would prove prophetic about what is going on?
There is nothing that any Hollywood writer could write that could possibly replicate what is our reality. Come on, man.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I think, I mean, there are some good plot twists involving a representative from California who gets in bed with the Russians. And, you know, there's definitely some.
Better
some
than I mean, reality. We have too. A porn star payoff.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We have representatives in bed with Russians.
We actually caught a representative leaving, you know, Congress and sneaking over to the White House with papers during an investigation that he was co-chairing. I mean, there's nothing that you could possibly. As a matter of fact, there would be producers that would say, "Nah, man, we can't.
Yeah,
we can't."
You know,
no one would believe that.
Right?
The third season of Twin Peaks was easier to follow than what's happening now, and more believable.
Well, Alan, by the way, you're all set for the march. We have about a minute here. Tell us what your plans are.
Well, you know, there's not one but two marches in New York City tomorrow. What's going to happen is it's going to snow awfully. It's going to be very, very cold.
Yeah.
And there's a division in the group. The two groups split off from each other, one of which has been accused of a blatant anti-Semitism. And that was the reason for the split.
Can we get maybe a live report at some point over the weekend?
No.
Well, we'll talk to your agent. All right, we'll have to take a break here. It is the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Heather Brichetti, Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, and you, of course. panel@wamc.org is the email address, panel@wamc.org. We will get to more letters and maybe some baseball cheating coming up.
Well, if you go out and lose your money, that's tough.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. That's Junior Watson, who will be at the Linda tomorrow night at 8 p.m., thelinda.org, if you want to find out more about that one. The Roundtable panel in session here, Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, Heather Brichetti, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Joe will be back on the 30th of January. He is excited. I talked to him yesterday, and he is really excited to come back.
Oh,
so,
can't wait to see my man.
Yep, he'll be back in the saddle on Thursday, the 30th of January.
JD.
This, we call him Joey Knees now.
Joey Knees.
That's his mobster name.
Hey. Joey Knees. I hope he paid up. I mean, I don't want to see the guy get hurt no more.
Joey Knees will be back. You know what I mean? This email came in from Jared in Albany. I have a quick question about impeachment. Is there any rule in the Constitution that might keep the House from impeaching more than one time? Because the way I see it, this president should be held to account for a lot more than one phone call. And that's from Jared.
Nope. No restrictions.
There's no restrictions. And quite honestly, I believe that Adam Schiff has already indicated that there's still investigations underway.
Alan?
Yeah, and I think it's a good reason that they shouldn't try to abbreviate this trial, because if they do, there's just more rationale for doing it a second time.
This one's from Michelle. With regard to your panelists about our justice system, we do have the best justice system if you are white and with money. If you're black, it's a different story. And that's from Michelle in East Hampton, Mass., who loves the show.
Well, she makes a point. She's certainly right about that, right?
Well, I think anybody's disagreeing with you.
I think we all agree that there's inequity, but there's room for improvement, definitely.
Yep. Social justice issues and inequities, that is absolutely correct. But that's not the debate. That's not even up for debate. Right. That is a foregone conclusion. The issue is whether we're going to have this conversation about bail reform in the context of social justice and economic inequalities, or are we going to have it in the context of public safety?
Doesn't it have to be both?
Well,
I think we're smart enough to. I think common sense, people with common sense solutions can be arrived at by people with common sense.
Well, you know, there's a political aspect to this also. And what it is that the Republicans are running on this bail reform. They think they're going to take back the Senate based on the fact that judges don't have the power to say this person is so dangerous, we're going to keep her or him here.
Albany had its.
I think the legislation was overbroad and took discretion from judges where it belonged. I think the underlying motivation was correct, which is too many people are incarcerated, and the ones who end up staying in jail are the folks who don't have money.
Yep.
So,
right.
You know, there's the balance. But what happened is the pendulum swung back too far. And, you know, I personally think the legislature is definitely very focused on trying to fix it. I don't know if they'll be able to get it done, but I think they understand the political context.
Well except the two leaders in both houses say no, not yet. Let it go.
Let's give it a little more time to see if it works, I believe, is what they're saying. And Albany County had its first burglary charge yesterday that was arraigned this morning, where the person accused of burglarizing someone's house is going to be released. That is untenable for people. And what I want to do is I want to make sure that, again, common sense solutions are arrived at by people with common sense. And my fear is that people are so entrenched in their positions right now that the vast majority of the good things about this reform will get lost in that battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Post is having a field day with every example of someone who's out on bail who commits another crime. Every time that comes up, they're putting it front and center, and it's definitely going to be used in the context of elections.
It is
if there's no fix to the legislation.
And of course, the governor of New York, whose political acumen is incredible, sees the truck coming down the road, and he's saying, this is a work in progress, as opposed to the two leaders of both houses who are saying, let it ride.
Well, they're both dealing with primaries from the left versus, well, actually, that's not really true. The Senate, there's not that many primaries from the left. But in the Assembly, certainly, there's a whole new round of primaries from left. So it's a politically tricky situation.
Yeah, God forbid we should do the right thing as opposed to what's political.
Well, and that's true, which is why I think you're seeing these signals, because no one wants to invite that primary by publicly stating or suggesting at this moment that they're going to, reform the reforms. And before I forget, there's a great reformer by the name of David Clegg, who just became the district attorney in Ulster County, who's being sworn in today. We want to wish him a lot of luck, and he won on a very progressive platform. And we just wish him a lot of luck.
This is the Roundtable panel. We have a good panel here today, and we're almost done. We have about eight or nine minutes, and I want to bring up a topic that was controversial here in the break, and I'll explain why it was controversial in a moment. Rosemary objected. Carlos Beltran is out as manager of the New York Mets before a single game. It's the latest fallout from the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal that rocked Major League Baseball. Mets announced the decision yesterday, saying Beltran and the team agreed to mutually part ways. The move came 2 days after Boston cut ties with manager Alex Cora, who was Houston's bench coach in 2017 when Beltran played for the Astros. A day before that, manager A.J. Hinch and Astros general manager fired by Houston after they were suspended by Commissioner Rob Manfred. Why do we care about this? Rosemary asked me this question.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Yeah,
I
have several questions about this, and I actually am looking forward to the discussion. But one of them is you have poo-pooed my desire to talk about the Royals,
right?
Harry and Meghan, which I see as an economic issue, a millennial issue, a view of changing ideas about institutions. I find it a really interesting story, not just about fashion. And,
it's a soap
and,
opera
and
on
know,
the O
yeah,
Network.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, come on. It's a soap opera on the O Network.
If you're right, then how does that gets excluded? But sports is okay to talk about.
We're talking about America's pastime. This is a personal attack I feel today because why
it's
is anybody picking on my
I brought it against Ray,
you know
not
I mean?
Against you at all.
Yeah, it's a personal attack. I'm the Prince of Pawtucket. That's where I'm from, and people want to jump
I've
on
never
the
heard that.
Stomp it on the Red Sox today.
Right.
But I think the reason why this is important is because we're talking about America's pastime, which we value the tradition so much. And when we see that pastime, its rules, its traditions being violated, people should come down on it.
Okay.
As swiftly as possible. I mean, I'm a Red Sox fan, and I'm embarrassed, right? I mean,
yeah.
I want someone to explain to me how we were stealing signs and Jackie Bradley, you know, bats under 200. I mean, I want to know that.
Well, they weren't that good at it. But.
Okay, my next question is, how come this matters and the inflated football cheating scandal did not? Again, it's football versus baseball. That's the only reason.
Yeah, I'm a Cowboy
that
fan. I can tell you right now, he did deflate those balls.
Oh, yeah, inflate.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
So that was cheating.
He was very Trumpian, too, in the way that he deflated the balls. And when they started doing the investigation, he all of a sudden his phone shattered.
Yeah, and it was yeah.
Heather.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Alan.
And that never rose. And this, we have people getting fired, and we're talking about
this
it
is
on
much
air.
More pervasive and widespread, and I think that's the bottom line.
Uh-huh. Okay, third question. I'm getting all my questions in now.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Is why is it illegal? It is okay for if you're the catcher or if you're a player on base and you're watching the catcher, it's okay. But to just sit up in a room, which is actually kind of clever, that's cheating.
You can't use electronic devices by rule.
Alan,
did you want to jump in here?
You can also steal bases in baseball, which I think you shouldn't be allowed to do.
Yeah,
all right, Alan, go ahead.
Sorry, Alan.
I just want to tell everybody, at the beginning of every baseball season, I walk into the newsroom and I head down to the right there, and there is Ray Graff. And you know what he says every year? This is our year for the Mets. This is it. Now, was Beltran going to actually make a difference, Ray, or were they going to lose like
always? Well, he was a rookie manager. Who knows if he would have made a difference? But he was a great player on arguably a Hall of Fame track who is now probably not going to be in Cooperstown. But I think the bigger issue here is that it wasn't just the Astros. And I think that was maybe a little line in this report that came out from MLB. There are many other teams who are
what's
really
MLB?
Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean,
no
including
abbreviations.
The Red Sox, I think, right? Including the Red Sox?
Yeah.
2018?
Well, no, that was great hitting by J.D. Martinez. We didn't steal nothing there, and I'll.
interesting.
But I'll tell you what. They wanted the game to end, okay? It was like 2,000 innings. So by 3 o'clock in the morning, they were stealing everything.
But, I mean, this isn't the first time that there has been a cheating scandal. We go back to 1918. Was it 1918?
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the Black Sox.
The Black Sox.
And there's
Pete Rose.
Shoeless Joe Jackson still not in the Hall of Fame, even though one of the great players, because he was involved.
Okay, so there really is a rule clearly written out, no electronics, so they knew absolutely this was wrong?
I believe
and
that
And how did they justify it? How did they say that?
They didn't think they would get caught.
Yeah.
Wow.
This sounds a lot like it's mirroring what's happening in American politics, where it's just it boils down to a winner take all at all costs.
Nice.
I was saving that for the very end. But no, no. I mean, I think this concept of that it's okay to do whatever you want to do to win, and as you know, as long as you don't get caught, use whatever means necessary.
Lance Armstrong. That's absolutely true. Yeah. I think we saw we've survived the steroid abuse. People are hitting, you know, on their contract year, they're hitting, you know, over 300, and signing new contracts, getting caught. There's no provision requiring those dollars to be given back. And so if you're a baseball player and you're 34 and you see this as your last contract period, yeah, you're going to go out. And if it means going out and injecting something that only horses and cows, you know, get injected, you're going to do that, right?
Well, here's why. It
doesn't justify it.
Perhaps knowing these signs was a little more heinous in that there are pitchers who are involved who – that was a big cloud on their career, and maybe they're not pitching now, or maybe they're in the minor leagues now. It has affected their livelihood and their ability to make money, and potentially actionable. And it's you know, you brought up the allegory of politics. This has a chance to weaken the underpinnings of baseball, much as what you talk about could underpinning, you know, weaken the underpinning of our democracy.
Yeah. So are they coming down hard enough?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know that they're coming down hard enough. I mean, look, I'm a Red Sox fan, okay? So my phone was buzzing with all the, you know, Yankee fans sending me, you know, gifts. Is this a New England problem? You know, and they of course they go to the
Tom Brady.
You know,
but just like in politics, man, we become tribal, right? We just begin to defend, and I'm like, you know what? No, I can't defend this, right? Yeah. If my son has a hat, you know, like I have a 1976 you know chair from Fenway sitting in my so this is like
Fenway's been, still around. What are you doing taking the chairs?
Yeah. Oh no, when they expanded it, Jim Rice. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But my point is that you know families, you know fathers and sons raise their sons and daughters on baseball and on this kind of pastime, and so it's just really disappointing and deflating when you learn that these people are doing this.
All right, here's a letter that came in from Luke. We're almost done here. Luke, Rosemary, here's a reason it's important, baseball, that is. Baseball, like other professional and big-time college sports, is heavily subsidized by the public with a blanket antitrust exemption and massive taxpayer funding going toward private companies in the form of stadiums. Part of the reason for those subsidies is the idea that sports have some lessons to offer the public in terms of fair play and integrity. This scandal, like others, demonstrates what a fraud that is. You're welcome. And that is
Thank you.
Luke.
Luke, point. You just got faced.
I did not get faced. Come on.
I think that Luke was, he's not that much of a fan of professional sports. Luke's
I would just, say that.
Luke
yeah.
just dropped the mic on Miss Armeo. By the way, your last names here sound like a... menu items at the Cheesecake Factory. We got bruschetta, we got mayo, we got graff. Isn't that like liver? Isn't that some
graffa
French,
is a really nice
foie gras.
Yeah, you know, we got...
Or that's grappa.
Yeah,
sorry.
And sores. What is that?
Well, yeah, I didn't say this sounded
that's
like...
That's what happened
after you. Sores all over my arm.
I didn't say this sounded like...
we got to go. We're done. Thank you.